The Rice to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook. Use that promo code RTRS, and brought to you by Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process, as well as Stateside Urban Craft Vodka, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter, which I'm looking forward to actually tomorrow. Win a case of Stateside for free with their Stateside Winners Club. Enter at statesidevodka.com. Of course, you got to be 21 or older. Boy, they can't make it easy, can they? Sixers beat the Nets. All that counts is that it's a W in the standings. Move into first place. Boy, just the end of that fucking game. Unbelievable. The Nets either scared of the Sixers or completely not scared at all in the weirdest regular season of all time. We also have some scouting reports on Nick Foles, the basketball player, a callback to a couple pods ago, deciding who the Sixers' actual rivals are based on an AU article, some Dwight Howard sympathy, and maybe the best question about the NBA draft I've ever read, and that is for you, Mike. A very special Carl Landry Record Club podcast this week we did, if you'd like to listen. It is a tribute to the late, great DMX, Earl Simmons. Ike Reese, who is an enormous DMX fan, hopped on with me and Mootloo, and we talked about our favorite DMX songs and his struggles with drugs and what his, you know, what his music meant and his life. Obviously passed away at 50 last week. So that is Carl Landry Record Club. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef.
Larry, sweetie, the man is here. We were right, y'all. We were right.
We were right.
Even when it went wrong, we were right.
We were right.
We was right, y'all. We were right. So say the name.
Say the name.
We were right, y'all. We were right.
We were right.
Even when it went wrong, we were right. We were right, y'all. We were right. So say the name.
Say the name.
Say the name.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who gets his podcasts wherever he gets his podcasts. That is Mike Levin.
Spike?
Yep.
Let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care.
That they almost
Sixers won.
It.
The yeah. Sixers won, and I don't care. I straight up, full body, no part of me cares.
Doesn't
it
matter.
It doesn't matter. It was a... I'm glad that they get a moral victory. For years of us taking moral victories, I feel... It is a real pleasure to give one out. But the Sixers want the one seed. I want the one seed. The Nets can have their scrappy guys who would never play in the playoffs and do that. I mean, the Sixers did that against Denver last week, where they forced the Denver starters to come back in and Doc didn't play our starters. It just happens sometimes. So I don't care. I straight up don't care. Mm-hmm. They beat the Mavericks by 1,000, and then they beat the Nets, and it's all fine. We're good.
Let me ask you this. Back-to-back aside, because there is some of that, but like when Blake Griffin doesn't play and LaMarcus Aldridge doesn't play and on top of Durant, yada, yada, if you had a bet, is the way the Nets are handling the regular season this year a good idea or a bad idea? If you had a bet on one or the other.
I mean...
It's pretty unprecedented.
I think some of the guys have legitimately been hurt. Obviously, Kyrie's missed seasons, KD's missed seasons, Harden has been pretty much an Iron Man his whole career. Mm-hmm. Blake's had injury problems, LaMarcus Aldridge is 1,000 years old. A lot of them are old and they want to make sure that they're going to be healthy for the playoffs. So I think if they're all healthy for the playoffs, then it turned out right. But, I mean, I don't think that they're... such a seamless fit, everybody together all the time, to where they can not build some level of chemistry. And I do think, like, just straight up not playing with each other that much as a full unit, as opposed to, like, the Sixers starting lineup or the Bucks starting lineup, is not the kind of thing that can, oh, they're going to lose so many games because of it. But in a moment, in, like, a a couple pivotal swing moments of a series absolutely can make a difference because they just, you know, get their wires crossed. Not to say that couldn't happen with the Sixers, happens all the time, but as far as like playing with each other, they haven't. They straight up haven't. So maybe that doesn't matter, but I would say it does sometimes, and it might cost them.
This is, for a lot of reasons, you know, for the Sixers, it's been great and fun watching them play well. Overall, for the NBA, I think it's been the worst regular season I can remember, and it does seem like they've gotten into the point of the year, most teams, where it doesn't, it happens, you know, for the last 15 games of the year, usually. I was talking with Sixers Adam earlier today. It's hard to even think about a game the Sixers have played against a good team this year, and the Lakers game is the one that Adam came up with, where both teams were playing at full strength. Where the Sixers were at full strength and the other team was at full strength. It's such an odd year, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just such a weird thing to get a hold of. It was great. Joel had a weird game tonight. I thought, like, a weird dominant game, it seemed like, you know? Like, almost an uneven dominant game. He had a really good quarter, I thought. But overall, I don't know. It was kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean, Joel had two like mediocre games back to back, and 39 and 13 in 33 minutes, and 36 and 7 in 26 minutes. He's just like, he's just incredibly good. He's just sort of effortless at times. The thing that you can take concern, and I like when the Sixers are kind of pushed a little bit, especially these Sixers. In previous years, it was kind of like they're just clinging to dear life type of thing. There were more of these kinds of games, and then it becomes concerning. But right now, it's just like, whatever, like, they're fine. The reason Tobias didn't come in was Doc said he was limping and there was some weird lineup. And I think Doc took it personally that this lineup wasn't like working out. So he didn't even put like Shake or anybody in to mix it up. It was just like, we're winning this fucking game, you assholes, was the way he was coaching the last four minutes of this game.
Yeah.
But for Embiid, it's like, the thing that you can take concern is those two guys, Alize Johnson and Nick Claxton, are like hard double him off of Simmons passes from like the top of the key. And it's like, when they're playing that far off of Simmons, which I think generally is a problem that they can, a tactic that the Sixers can exploit with little dribble handoffs to Shake or Korkmaz or Seth or whatever, or Ben getting ahead of steam, whatever it is. But when they're like, hey, you're gonna try to get the ball to Joel, we're just gonna double him right away. And they're still trying to make that interior pass with Simmons, I think that's just really stupid. I think that Simmons shouldn't be the one making that pass, whether it's Korkmaz or Seth or putting Shake in to do that, so Simmons can just like be, you know, a rover type, whether it's running to the nail or staying at the dunker spot or whatever it is. But that was an example of like trying to do, that's when the offense slows down. That's when it looks like last year's Sixers, when it's just like Horford holding the ball up high, everyone standing in the lane, 14 post-ups happening at the same time. Like, that's a concern. And that's when the offense slowed down. The best part about this game with the Sixers is that they were really moving the ball so well the first half, first three quarters. Zero turnovers in the first quarter, which is great to see. And then, but sometimes because it's a post-up heavy offense, it has a tendency to get really slow when it becomes, okay, this is what we're doing, and now we're just going to stare at the post-up pass for a long time and allow Embiid to get doubled right away. It really got gunked up and because those guys were just playing their asses off because they're young and they don't know any better, they allowed them to like get back in the game and the Sixers took their foot off the gas. I'm not concerned, but that is something that like you're going to see that in the playoffs.
Yeah,
are we going to adjust it?
Yeah, they're going to, every team's going to hard double Embiid, you know, and they're going to, that's, you know.
But usually they don't do it before the pass is even made, you know, like Claxton's playing 15 feet off Embiid, off Simmons, helping out in the post already, and Simmons is still like looking at Embiid in the post trying to just like thread it in there, and it's just like, let's get some offense. I mean, I get why you want to get Joel the ball, but let's get some offense moving so they can't just stand there and know where it's going to be. It just became really, really slow and predictable. And when you have it is certainly a factor in having a guy like Simmons be one of your primary ball handlers. But at a time like that, you just can't. Like, you just can't have him be that, because him holding the ball up there, if Shake is making that pass, they're not going to double off him so far. Mm-hmm. So then Embiid will have more room to do it. And if Claxton doubles off Embiid in the dunker spot, then Simmons can set a pick for somebody in the corner or just go right up to them for like an alley-oop type of thing. Like, there's a million things you can do, but the one you can't do and what they kept doing was Simmons making the inlet pass into the post to very bad, repeatedly bad results.
You know, people aren't going to want to hear this, but watching the incredible ball handling, feel for the game, just unbelievable offensive play from Furkan Korkmaz was something that you really get. Like, you really get an appreciation for the game when you watch somebody like that who has such a sick handle. And, I mean, you saw him cook Nick Claxton. It was incredible. It was one of my favorite moments of the year.
It was awesome. It was a very very Luka-type play where he just kind of slow 2 feet down as, as Claxton kind of goes fading by. And a little kiss off the glass from 4 feet. That was nice. Korkmaz played nice. It was a good game. I'm just, like, refusing to take anything else out of it aside from it was a nice game, and everybody sort of had their great moments. I thought Tobias was just really awesome. There's really nothing. He just continues to dominate in his role, doing what he does. I thought he shot the ball pretty quick tonight. There wasn't a ton of just staring and waiting and hesitating. It was nice. I mean, and he's just got those contested fadeaways. It doesn't matter who's contesting. They just keep going in. 26 points on 17 shots, just doing his thing. I mean, Tobias and Korkmaz, a lot of defense coming their way over and over again. A combined 5 steals and blocks from them. Those are the guys. And you get it from Danny. You get it from Ben. I thought Ben had a really nice game defensively. I thought Matisse did a bunch of nice things. Kyrie's going to get his because he's Kyrie, but and hit a bunch of really tough shots in the first half.
But he's pretty sick to watch just from a skill standpoint.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's for unbelievable. Sure. And he's gotten better, and he keeps getting better for sure. But I just think it's kind of what I think about with, like, Michael Porter Jr. also, is like guys who make tough shots regularly, when the defense is that much more engaged, they won't. Like, it's just when you're depending on hard shot after hard shot after hard shot, and you're not, especially for Kyrie, tall, things are going to get affected there. And so that's why I'm not a crazy fan of his game as far as, like, a would I want him on my team type of thing, although he is very fun to watch and impressive and stuff. But yeah, Tobias Korkmaz doing their thing. Got a lot of pokeouts. A big day for pokeouts. I think I prefer the, like, interception pick six type of thing, which Ben had one. I think Korkmaz had one. Matisse might have had one. But a big day for pokeouts from behind. I think it is contagious in a good way. Danny had a pokeout that Shake then got a hold of, which, and then immediately outletted to Danny for a dunk, which was nice to see.
Yeah. And speaking of dunks, Tobias Harris, I forget who he dunked on, but he's dunked on guys like 4 times or 5 times this year. I didn't think he had it in him, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was nice. It was a nice game. I don't care. They did what they had to do. Rajon Tucker came in for 25 seconds of meaningful basketball, which was fun to see defensively.
I love him.
He really is. He's great.
I love
him. And he's fun to watch. He's any like 6'3 guard that, like, just is absolutely a monster physically and takes everything personally and might not be crazy skilled, but has just a motor. And athleticism is always fun to watch. It was a good game. They beat Dallas. They beat the Nets, and they are the number one seed in the East. And with the easy schedule after this run, and Brooklyn's difficult one, they figure to be the number one seed in the East going into the playoffs, which is really good.
A quote from Ben Simmons on the Nets: they have a lot of talent, but there's only one ball, and you have to play defense too.
Ben being an only one ball guy is so predictable and very, very fun. Ben's like a 52-year-old guy in an early, whatever, 24-year-old body. He's definitely that type of mentality.
The other quote from Ben this week, I think this was it on The Jump? I forget what he was on. Was he on First Take? I forget.
I think Rachel Nichols interviewed him.
Okay. The on Gobert and the Defensive Player of the Year award, he guarded me in Utah. I had 42, and apparently I'm not a scorer.
It's a good line.
Yeah.
It's a good line.
You could take half of that and just spread it out amongst the other games if you want. That
was a really good line.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Gobert's going to win Defensive Player of the Year, but I will say this. It has gotten to a place. It is rare that a wing player, not impossible, but rare that a wing player gets serious consideration for that award. And Simmons will get, you know, I think a considerable number of votes for the award. So I think that's saying a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Anything else from the game? I don't have anything else. We have a lot of other stuff.
I'm concerned that, and this happens from time to time, Seth Curry attempted one shot in the first half,
yeah,
and it was not a three. He ended with five. Got to get him more shots.
It just takes him so long to shoot,
yeah,
man, you know?
Just like gotta find a way to get him more shots at something. Because
they always go in.
He's good. Yeah, he's very good at shooting when he does it. Danny also didn't have many shots in the first half and only ended with four. Like, I would like those to go up. But this was just a very much a Tobias, Ben, and Embiid game, which is fine. They all played well and effectively. I thought Shake had a good game.
Yeah, he was good.
15 points on 8 shots. I mean, he had that that like 28-footer that did not look heavy coming out of his hands, which was good to see.
He had that little run to start the fourth, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He did have the one really bad end of the first half play when he went behind his back and Kyrie just jumped it, and then he fouled him. That was a tough moment for Shake, but really, really nice Shake game. Very composed, did all the stuff he's supposed to. This felt like a good blend of creating and scoring and hanging defensively and finding his teammates and all that stuff. You're always kind of trying to find that happy medium with Shake, because he can sometimes get tunnel vision and sometimes he can disappear, and I think this was the right level for me.
The only other thing that I forgot to bring up, we haven't talked about Embiid's knee brace and his fixation on it. He's like moving around a little funny,
yeah,
and I can't tell if it's because of the knee brace or because his knee is bothering him. I hope it's because of the knee brace. Embiid has never liked braces,
anything.
Guards.
He's never liked anything.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Face mask, nothing. He's never liked it.
Fingers crossed, I guess. Just leave it alone.
I think he's just uncomfortable wearing the bulky brace. That's what it looks like to me. He's always constantly, there's like shifting it, adjusting it, that kind of thing. He's still, I mean, he had that huge dunk on, I wouldn't say on DeAndre, he just kind of dusted him and then landed on it and tweaked it a little bit. And even on that play, I don't know if you noticed, but that play even got Shake up from the bench doing like some mean mugging and pounding his chest and stuff, and you never see that from Shake.
No, because he hates Embiid.
That was good to see. They don't hate each other. They don't. But there's obviously been prior interactions there.
Yeah.
And it was good to see Shake show a little emotion. I like that. And then Embiid blocked the shit out of Kyrie. I thought he passed pretty well. I would like to see Embiid pass, find a couple guys like underneath the basket a little bit more often. But he passed well. He didn't have a single personal foul I'm looking at right now, which is odd. Joel did. But guys aligned. The Nets did a nice job of sort of forcing him and DeAndre Jordan forcing him to like take threes, thinking like that's our best shot, is if he takes a bunch of threes and misses and gets in his head and whatever. And Embiid just went 3 of 6 from three. Like he didn't start taking like 14 threes the way Giannis occasionally does and just like takes it over and over again and takes it personally. He took them when he felt comfortable with them. He made half of them and he got to the line 11 times. It was a really this is an MVP type game in a game when he didn't even really have it that much. And it's still just what he does.
Two things I want to go over with you with DraftKings odds, Mike. I want to get your thought on it. First of all, Embiid down to plus 300 on MVP. He is second. Jokic is minus 225, of course, right after the Murray injury. We don't know how that's going to affect it. The next lowest one is Giannis at plus 1,200. So it's really just down to Embiid and Jokic. Jokic a heavy favorite, but plus 300, it's just like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he could do it, I think, still.
Yeah, I mean, I think the intensely lame people who have MVP votes will really focus on the amount of games played because of the toxic, the best ability is availability fallacy and incorrect opinion that has been held for years.
And what is the best ability, Mike?
Ability, generally, I would say. So I think Jokic is going to win. But I don't. Yeah.
Well, let me
especially get, if they hold up without Murray, then yeah. maybe he should. That is quite a number amount of games for him to also be dominant in. If he fucking sucked, yep. then it'd be different. But he has been very good.
I think the one thing that could help Embiid, and I don't, you can tell me how you feel about this, is I don't think anybody knows how many games anybody is playing this year because it's only 72 and because of the COVID restrictions. And I think it'll make it all look a little bit blurry, which I think could help him.
Well, he hasn't missed any games is the problem, Jokic.
Right,
so
right.
So if he misses like two, then it'd be like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Well, Danny Green's only missed one game, so he should be up for MVP as well. His availability has been very high. And then here's the other thing. I just found this interesting. This is all at DraftKings. These are the DraftKings odds. The Jazz have the best record in the West. They're plus 900. The Sixers have the best record in the East. They're plus 1,100. The Suns have the second best record in the West. They're plus 2,000. Now, obviously, the Nets are very low odds. I just can't remember a time when so many high seeds are such low, like long shots as far as the odds go to win a championship, you know? It just seems wild.
Yeah, weird season, fun season. Anything could happen.
The weirdest. DraftKings, this is where I make all those bets. They have a special now. You love basketball, right? They're gonna give you a chance to turn $1 into $100, turn $1 into $100. By the way, one member of the Ricky staff bet Jokic to win MVP at plus 3,600 before the season. Bet $28.
It was plus 3,600?
Plus 3,600.
Oh, my God. Giving away money. What am I doing?
And that's what DraftKings is doing. They're giving out 100-to-1 odds. Turn $1 into $100. Pick any basketball team to win their next game. If the team wins the game and hits the three, or the team doesn't even have to win the game. The team that you pick just has to hit a three. You get $100. It's 100-to-1. Team of your choosing hits a three. You get $100. Come on. Threes? It happens all the time. DraftKings is the best way, the only way to bet, the best app, the only app. Deposit, withdraw, whenever you want. Feel safe about it. Feel secure. Download the app now. Use promo code RTRS when you sign up. Turn $1 into $100 in free bets. If the basketball team of your choosing hits a three, that is code RTRS to turn $1 into $100 in free bets for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply in partnership with Meadows Racetrack and Casino. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Last thing I had is Shamet looks kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like his off the dribble game, you know, like his handle's kind of nice. He can get to the hole. He's always
finished
a good
around
shooter.
Embiid. Yeah. Got one up quick around Embiid nicely. Yeah, I mean, he played point guard at Wichita State. They sort of just turned him into JJ, but he's always had a little bit of that handle, and he's fast and a little bit shifty, and now his ball handling has caught up to his speed a little bit, and he's a good player. Like he tries, okay. and he works on defense. He's small, and he's going to get pushed around physically, but he tries, and that's a lot of it. He played well. I thought it was so Dwight was out tonight. I think it was Dwight's first game that he missed, aside from all the ejections, and they went with Mike Scott back up 5 minutes. Mike Scott getting those shots up. He took two. Made one of them, and it was cool to see. This is the matchup that you can do this on. Mike has done as good as he possibly can against like bigger defending opposing centers, but he's just limited. Against Brooklyn, like they don't have any of those guys. At least tonight, they didn't have those guys. And even when those guys are there, it's still not like Mike's got on LaMarcus Aldridge is not like, oh no, we're so scared. Because it's Nick Claxton and Bruce Brown and Alize Johnson and stuff. And so that allowed Ben, I think, to operate more, to go to the rim. I thought Ben bullied his way to the rim nicely a bunch of times and pushed and had space to do so. I thought they just, like, the bench, the, like, non-Embiid units, I felt, did a nice job of swinging the ball a lot, getting open looks, a couple, like a shake three in the corner after a bunch of swings. Mike's got three in a corner off a Ben driving kick. It's just like the court opens up nicely, and that's, you're not going to be able to survive every Joel bench stint in the playoffs, but like I think the benefit to having not Dwight Howard in there is that you can at least start to play differently so that the defense has to catch up to you rather than you're trying to play the same type of game you play with Embiid, except it's, you know, old ass Dwight Howard in there banging around and clogging up stuff. So it's, I think that there's a way to like get by when you can. And if it's Mike or Anthony Tolliver, it's just nice to see like spreading it out and running and gunning is starting to look a little better, because earlier in the season it was like, Doc was like, we never try it. And it's like, well, maybe try it. And so now it's starting to look a little bit more comfortable.
I mean, quite simply, maybe you'll score a couple points, you know, mm-hmm. like where, yeah, you'll give up a few, but you know, maybe you'll score a couple points. So Doc doesn't seem to want any part of Anthony Tolliver on the, he didn't play tonight, right? I don't think.
No, it was his first. Why doesn't he want Anthony Tolliver? This is his first day here.
His quote was like, whose minutes do you want me to give him? Tobias? Like, that was his quote when they asked him. It's just weird. You know, like
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
He'll play a little bit. He'll get a taste. He's physical. He's a little bit bigger than Mike Scott. He's a better shooter. He hasn't played in a year, so he's fresh. Those legs are very fresh, old and fresh. I'd like to see what we got in Anthony Tolliver. A long time non-Sixer Anthony Tolliver.
The hard to stomach YouTube comment of the week. Leave us a comment down below. Give us a like, subscribe, leave us a comment. Brought to you by Stateside Vodka, which is filtered 7 times, is gluten-free, is kosher, is made in Philly. We are going to have a special coming up, a playoff special with Stateside Vodka. I don't want to give away too much information, but it's going to be pretty awesome. That's coming up soon. But for now, go to statesidevodka.com. You can order from 44 states. You can also win a case. They're giving away a case every month with the Winners Club. Statesidevodka.com. You got to be 21 or older. All right. 2 comments from YouTube, both hard to stomach. Now, this one is in regard, if you'll remember, we got the email asking us if we could distribute 10 championships to Philadelphia teams in the rest of our lifetimes, how would we spread them out? Brian B. says, 10 Eagles championships, easy. They would literally have to scrub Twitter off the internet because Eagles fans trolling would be so relentless, which I think goes for any sport, actually, in Philadelphia, right?
If 10, there were 10 anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a lot.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I see the rationale.
And then Just Chill 76. So this is in reference to an email I read where it was from an Australian, and the quote was, would it worm with Doc and Austin Rivers? And I mentioned, would it worm? Is that an Australian phrase? I got several emails from Australians and this comment. I could be wrong, but I think he meant, would it work? Not worm. M is right next to K. I've never heard that otherwise as an Aussie myself.
I like that you just assume any term or spelling mistake that you don't know is Australian, though.
Well, they use the C word so much, and it throws me off their entire language. They could have some colloquialism, right, that I don't know?
I like the worm that you imagined it to be.
Yeah.
I think that's a sort of a nice phrase.
Would it worm?
Would it worm? It could worm.
It could worm. You never know. AU wrote a thing on our website today about the Utah Jazz being our truest and most petty rival in the NBA. Of course, there is the Ben Simmons, Rudy Gobert thing. There's the Ben Simmons, Donovan Mitchell thing. There's the Joel Embiid, Donovan Mitchell thing. I'm going to read you some teams, and I want you to rate from 1 to 10 how much you feel they're an actual rival of the Sixers, starting with the Jazz.
I'll give an 8.
I think that's fair, which is a lot for a random Western Conference team.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, the Heat.
The Jimmy factor is high.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they have Bielitsa's on Miami, right?
Yes, he is.
That's high. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Some parts of the Sixers fan base would say Iguodala. Obviously, you and I would not.
Would not. Yeah.
Tyler Hero, very hateable looking. Give me a 6.
I'm going to admit something to you. Very honestly, in the playoffs this year, I would personally be terrified of Jimmy Butler. only because I just think he loves motivation. And I just think his desire to not lose to the Sixers would be so high. I would actually be scared of them. They haven't played well all year. Oladipo just got hurt. I would be scared because of the Jimmy factor. I'm admitting.
Yeah, I mean, they've been tough. They've been pretty ravaged by injuries and stuff, mm-hmm. and seem like they're really just patching together, just get me to the playoffs type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jimmy, since Brett's not here, there's only like four people here that Jimmy played with, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Ben, Tobias,
Joel,
and maybe Korkmaz.
Mike Scott.
Sure. He probably harbors a lot of resentment to Mike Scott. Really wants to put him in his place.
I would give the Heat a 7, but I would give them an 8, but Joel actually likes Butler, like a lot, right. So it makes it lower. Celtics.
I mean, I'm just going to go 10 until we beat them.
Yeah. I think they
beat us twice. They've embarrassed us twice. Mm-hmm. I would say the second one was more of the most recent one was more of a formality with Ben out, and then I think one of those first two games was close, and then it just became, I don't think I even like moved or reacted at all during those games 3 and 4. I'm sure those podcasts were not fun to listen
to. Not great. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm gonna go 10 until we can just put them in their place and move on to other teams.
The Nets, I'm giving a 2. I don't think there's any real rivalry there. Maybe we'll get one out of the playoffs, but I don't think there is one. Do you?
I mean, they have so many former Sixers.
Mm-hmm. But we don't dislike TLC or Shamet.
No, I think they feel that. Yeah. I feel like Shamet probably feels bitterness towards getting drafted by there and so quickly traded. Brooklyn is obviously the closest team to the Sixers. Geographically,
mm-hmm.
And so I think that's part of it. And I think, you know, I'm not a guy that would do this. I did find it slightly funny that in a game that Kevin Durant wasn't playing, a KD sucks chant erupted, which is just sort of par for the course for Philadelphia fans who haven't been to a sporting event in over a year. I think it's going to be high. It's they're sort of like, I'm not a boxing guy, but they're sort of like the boxers sort of feeling each other out the first couple rounds. Or, these guys aren't going to play. Okay, these guys aren't going to play. No one's landing any big punches yet. But I think it would get pretty intense pretty quickly in a playoff series.
I agree with you there. I think we could have a real rivalry out of the playoffs. There was a siren there. We're going to need a hot take from you.
LaMarcus Aldridge and Dwight Howard get into a full fist fight and both get ejected for the whole series.
That'd be nice. The Knicks.
I don't feel it. I feel nothing. Mm-hmm. They've been so bad for so long, and I feel like happy for them that they're even decent. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they make the playoffs, and they're a physical team. Kind of, I would say they're the Knicks and Sixers are two of the most physical teams in the league just by personnel. And probably by like grimy old school coaching styles and Doc and Tibbs. So it could get physical. I think there's going to be some pushing and shoving for sure. So that would come out if the Sixers ended up meeting the Knicks like in a 1-8 or 2-7 or something. I'll give it a 3.
Yeah, it seems like all the games are tough, but it, you know, the Sixers have won what, like 16 of the last 20 games versus the Knicks, and that was Embiid's point about the Celtics. It's not a rivalry until we win. So,
well, Ben's never lost to the Knicks, which I think is really funny. A funny,
I think it's 16
career trait.
Yeah, the Bucks.
Bucks, interesting. I wonder if Drew harbors any resentment toward the previous regime trading him and kickstarting the process that would allow the Sixers to select Joel. It's probably been too long at this point that he now is on his second, third team afterwards.
He's made $250 million. You know?
Yeah, he's doing fine.
Right, yeah.
But Giannis and I think Simmons and Embiid have a little bit of physicality there. DiVincenzo's from Philly.
The shithole Instagram comment.
The shithole, that's true. That's a true, yeah.
fly the process.
Yeah, I mean, Budenholzer. I mean, maybe like some residual Brogdon action there for stealing the Rookie of the Year. I would give Milwaukee a 5.5.
I was going to say 6, so same page. Raptors.
Well, you know, Kawhi's gone. Ibaka's gone. Gasol is gone. Lowry should be here, probably.
VanVleet, there's not much, I think, there. Just memories. It's like,
yeah,
ghosts.
It's just memories. Yeah. It's just, yeah, there's really ghosts there. But in the playoff series, if they got hot, which they certainly could, because they certainly have the players to do it, and ended up getting in the 8 seed, and it was 1-8, Sixers Raptors, I'd be upset, first of all, and I would. It's there enough. Just thinking about that possibility means, like, yeah, there's still some rivalry there. So I would say, because of, you know, Lowry's a gnat and can get, you know, pesky in steals and charges, and Siakam and Simmons are, you know, have an interesting kind of mirror of each other sometimes. Norm Powell not being there actually is nice, although Gary Trent is also good. He had 44 the other night. Wild.
Dude, I'd much rather have Gary Trent than Norm Powell. Gary Trent's a baller, man. That dude is a baller. He's like a one-man rivalry, too. I feel like we could end up hating him a lot. You know,
he certainly takes it personally on the court. I would say I would give them, the Raptors, a 6 still. I think out of respect to how recently it was, I'll give them a 6.
Final two, Lakers.
I mean, I would say that's, you know, 80. I mean, the 80s end, you know, 80, 83 was so long ago.
But then 01.
And 01 was, you know, demolishing. Like, it was never close. It was a nice game one, but come on. And then it's just like the personalities, because they both guys, I think LeBron and AD and Simmons and Embiid know how much they kind of like mirror each other a little bit. It becomes personal, and obviously it's personal in my living environment. But I would say low. I would say like a 4.
They always seem to get up for the Lakers, though.
For sure.
You know? And then this one's obviously a 10. It shouldn't even exist, as they should be in a different locale, but the Denver Nuggets?
That 2?
That's all mine. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Lorenzo Brown mailbag. Writes to RickySanchez@gmail.com. Send us one. I feel like we got maybe we'll do it right toward the end of the season. Just plow through all the emails. We have so many. Writes RickySanchez@gmail.com. Send us a basketball and a non-basketball question. This is sort of both. I love this email so much. I've been waiting on it for like 3 weeks. This comes from John. I'm 50 years old and in pretty good shape for my age. When I was in my 20s and early 30s, I was an above average but not great pickup player. I haven't played organized basketball in about 12 years. Here's my question. If you gave me 100 chances to bring the ball up court with Matisse Thybulle pressing me, assume he's giving 100% effort each time, how many times do you think I could get the ball over half court? Personally, I'd set the over-under at 2.5.
No.
What do you think?
Under by a lot. I would say maybe one if he like falls down, because he can do that sometimes.
If he could just rush out to the right or something and maybe just like go as fast as he could, maybe he gets in front of Thybulle.
Yeah, I would say if the overrunner was 0.5, I'd go over. But if the overrunner was 1.5, I'd probably still go under.
Go under. I think that's good. So, John, there's your answer. Great email. This comes from Nick. Is it me or does anyone else feel bad for Dwight? I know his antics are his fault, but I also find it hard to blame the guy for getting texts when he's getting an elbow to the throat and getting a foul called on him seconds later and other crazy shit, but not getting the calls. To make it worse, Doc doesn't publicly support him. You're not going to use your challenge anyway. Force the refs to make that call and get the other guy a flagrant foul. My question is, how much do you blame Dwight for his antics, and how much do you think it is him being frustrated with the situation and hoping he can get support from Doc? P.S. Worried about the vibes moving forward if it's the latter. What do you think?
No, I mean, Dwight's having a blast, first
of
all.
He is. He's having such a good time.
I think Doc gets frustrated with him, rightfully so, but clearly not frustrated enough to force Daryl to go get him a more playable backup center. It just feels like the things that Dwight does wrong are so correctable, and he doesn't correct them. He just loves it. He loves to get an elbow. I think there's some reputation stuff in there. Sometimes he gets called for a flagrant or a foul or a tech or whatever it is just because of his actions, frankly. But sometimes they're not necessarily merited. But I think Doc knows that he depends on him and knows that he's fine enough, especially for his contract. And Doc not using his contract, his challenge is certainly frustrating. But yeah, Dwight is Dwight. I've accepted the ride. I'm on the ride. We're going up and down. Sometimes I'm having a blast. Sometimes I'm throwing up. But I'm not trying to get off the ride anymore. I'm just on the ride.
Maybe when they win the championship, the moment that we all want is like Dwight pouring the champagne on Doc and Doc just being annoyed by the entire thing. Like that's the moment. Non-basketball question. If you two had to share a 1,000 square foot place, two bedrooms, one bathroom, no girlfriend or wife, only worked from home, how long do you think before you couldn't stand each other? Or do you think that wouldn't happen? Love you guys. Love the pod. Want AU on more.
If us?
Yeah. It wouldn't take very long, I don't think.
No, it wouldn't take very long at all.
Yeah. Now,
one bathroom is tough. One bathroom is bad.
Can I ask a question, which I'll ask you what you think? I think if we don't have to do the podcast, it would last much longer.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, what are the odds of us talking for 2.5 hours a week in person if we don't have to do that?
I don't talk to anybody for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Aside from you. It's so much talking. I don't have anything else to say.
It's a whole lot. So I think we'd probably talk less if we didn't have to do the podcast and we lived together.
Yeah, for sure. This would not last long. You know, it wouldn't last long.
No.
And then P.S., when AU shamefully said get off my gold for the first time, it was the single funniest moment of my listening/watching. It was a great moment. Mike, if I gave you the choice, you could sue any person in the NBA this week. I give you a choice. You can sick Kornblau on any NBA person to sue them. Who would it be?
I mean, Dave Silver.
Yes.
Number one always, yep. For sure.
Not protecting our sanctity. Not protecting our sanctity at all.
Not protecting the sanctity. I mean, the schedule.
Yeah.
Friggin' forcing meniscuses to tear left and right because, God forbid, the boring-ass Olympics gets friggin', you know. The coverage of the Olympics. My God. People love it. They must watch whatever fucking once every 4 years event that they think about. Come on.
Kornblau had a great tweet tonight that the Nets, keeping Kyrie off the floor was giving them a better chance to win at the end. Kornblau acknowledged. Sure. Kornblau, the premier, the only boutique personal injury law firm in the Delaware Valley. 40 years, Kornblau and Kornblau has been around. You're like, who's the other Kornblau? Well, there's a bunch of them, but the two Kornblaus now are Adam Kornblau and his mom. His parents started it years and years ago, and they've been just like kicking ass. Personal injury lawsuits since then. Don't be a hero. You get into a car accident, slip and fall, injured at work, you know, something, anything like medical malpractice. Don't be like, don't tough it out. If somebody is at fault, Kornblau will find that person, and Kornblau will make them pay. And you're going to have a guy who's going to be with you every step of the way. Personal injury lawsuit sometimes could take a couple years, but you don't have to worry about it. He does. He's been doing it for people for years and years, and he'll continue to do it. It's his passion. He takes care of our listeners. And if you need legal advice that isn't personal injury, just call him. He takes care of all of our listeners with that, too. 215-576-7200. Kornblau and Kornblau. Ask for Adam or email kornblau@kornblauandkornblau.com. spell out the and in that email address, Kornblau spelled with a K, and the rest, as they say.
It's up to you.
Kornblau and Kornblau, official law firm of the process. All right. Okay, here's the draft question. I like this one. This is for you. This is from Mark. I don't know what my answer is. I haven't thought about it. A magic genie, played by Shaquille O'Neal, comes to you and offers you one of the following special powers to give to Daryl Morey as he evaluates prospects ahead of this year's draft.
Great Daryl Morey gif on the broadcast, by the way. Of great him him reacting to a something on the court, and he just sort of put his head in his hands.
Oh, and really? I didn't see it.
Yeah, you'll see it as a gif, I'm sure, coming up.
Which are you choosing? Note, each of these apply to every player in the draft, i.e., if you choose floor predictor, you get the floor for every player in the draft, not just one. So you get to give this skill to Daryl Morey for the draft. Which one you choose? One is floor predictor. This is a special power to know exactly what a prospect's floor is. One is ceiling predictor, obviously. Another is the exact stat line for the prospect's rookie season if you choose them and play them on the Sixers. The next one is the exact stat line for the prospect season, but you don't know which season it is. The next is character assessment, an exact assessment of a prospect's character, including how hard they work, whether they love basketball, etc., on a scale of 1 to 10. Truth serum. You can ask a prospect any question, and they're forced to answer truthfully. I like this one. Single NBA game. Videotape of what the player would look like in a single NBA game playing for the Sixers. And finally, magic allergy assessment. Tells all of the allergies each prospect has. Which one of those skills would you choose to give Daryl?
I think ceiling predictors probably the most relevant, because if someone has a ceiling of, you know, they become an all-star or whatever, they become an MVP candidate, that would matter more than knowing, like, hey, this guy's at least going to be playable, because you can find those guys without having any of these special powers, you know what I mean? So, like, if you could have gotten Jimmy Butler when he did fell to 30, you could have gotten Giannis when he fell to the late teens, Jokic, all that stuff. Like, that just, it just matters so much more. So I think that's a safe and easy answer. But stat line for prospects rookie season is also interesting, because not that everybody has to play well their rookie year, or can and doesn't bounce back and doesn't get older and better and everything, but there's value in certainly knowing that. But I feel like the ceiling is the ceiling. That's what we're doing here. That's the whole point of the draft, is to try to get the highest upside prospect you can get.
I'm going to go with character assessment. Because,
No, yes, I am.
Here I am.
No, you're not.
It's important, and it's the only thing you can watch tape on a player. You can watch tons of tape. You can do statistical analysis. You can have scouts watch the tape. But as far as character, all you can do is interview him once and talk to his coach. Yes.
No, you talk to the family, talk to the friend. They do so much character assessment already. But they talk to their college coaches. They talk to their teachers. They talk to everybody else. They feel like they have a good sense of at least who this guy is as a human being.
It's
before
the hardest
they
thing
make the trip
to really assess. It has to be, because it is the here's what I would suggest, that a lot of whether a player hits their ceiling or not is based on their character.
Okay. You want a therapist, a child psychologist
no.
to be the GM.
No. Remember, this is you're giving Daryl the skill to know the exact answer to this question on a scale of 1 to 10, to know this exact thing about how they will act, how hard they will work, how they will be affected by difficult situations. Like, it's the hardest to me, it's the hardest thing to assess. There's no tape on it.
Yeah, I think you get a sense of by talking to everybody in this person's life. And if you can find out who the next Giannis is,
but
then that's better, more valuable for a draft.
But then how does Anthony who the Cavs pick number one?
Bennett.
Anthony Bennett, like him or Fultz or like there are a lot of players who get to the league and like they're clearly skilled physically and they know how to play. They're good at basketball. There's just something that doesn't connect. Don't you think that has something to do with who they are?
Yeah, it just would be far down the list of this special power ability. So for you, the best ability is character.
No.
Not availability and not ability. Nope. It's character.
I would suggest that I'm not saying that the most important thing, I'm not saying that the most important thing isn't their basketball skill. That's the most important thing for them to have. But it's also easier to know than the other thing. We're giving him a skill that he can't get otherwise. I think like guessing what a player's ceiling is, we do that all the time.
Well, this wouldn't be guessing. Special skill is that it is.
You would know what their ceiling is. You wouldn't know what chance they would have of reaching it. That's the difference. If you get the ceiling predictor. That's my answer. Final answer. Non-basketball question, and this is actually a character assessment. You can only choose one of the... he didn't say that, but I say it. You can only choose one of the following for the rest of your life. A single song of your choosing, i.e. you only get to listen to that one song for the rest of your life, but at least you get to choose the song, or the entirety of the Goo Goo Dolls discography.
These choices...
it's got to be Goo Goo Dolls. I can't just have one song. The Goo Goo Dolls have a bunch of albums. I can learn to love them.
I know two Goo Goo Dolls songs.
Iris.
Slide.
Slide. You know Name?
No.
Long Way Down?
Nope.
Balloon? Baby's Black Balloon?
Yeah, Black Balloon. Okay, so three. Okay. You know three Goo Goo Dolls songs. So would that be better than like some very long song that I would pick that I like more?
And it got a DeVita, yeah. This comes from Vikram. Hey, Spike and Mike, basketball question. My best friend Steve and I pride ourselves on avoiding the hyperbolic nature of most Philadelphia sports fans and usually remain even-keeled through the ups and downs. Before the season, we had never been more far apart on a player than Shake Milton. I said that Shake Milton had an opportunity to be a dark horse six-man of the year candidate. Steve told me I was tripping and cited nightmares from the Celtics series about how skittish he looked when Marcus Smart pressured the ball. Considering how far apart we were, the Shake Milton season-long bet was born. We put an over-under on 13 points per game with a dinner at Zahav, the 2019 James Beard Award winner for the best restaurant in the country, on the line. Considering the preset menu with drink pairings, we're talking $300 for this meal. We also put some qualifiers on the bet. Shake could not be traded, start more than 24 games, or play less than 48 games. We're getting close to all three qualifiers. With George Hill's impending return, I'm starting to get a little anxious. Shake is averaging 13.7 points per game and needs to average 11.3 points per game for the remainder of the season to hit. With George Hill coming back, and Shake just playing okay recently, what do you think the likelihood is that I'll win my bet? 13 points per game.
I think he will. I mean, I don't know how many he's going to average. I think if he averages 11 the rest of the way, it's like fine. I think some guys will get the night off here and there, so there might be more opportunities for him to play and everything. But I saw, I think, Matt Carey and I thought Sohail, I think, were talking about like maybe Shake being the guy that's the odd man out of the rotation when George Hill assumes the role. And I just don't agree with that. I think Shake has the most level of creation ability out of anyone on the team. And I think that, I mean, aside from Embiid, I guess, but as a perimeter ball handler, I think there is a level of create for others. There's a level of getting fouled, pulling up three-level scorer type of thing. Like, I just think that he gives you something that nobody else on the roster gives you. George Hill's good. I'm excited to see him. He's good on both ways. He'll be so solid. But like, he's a straight line driver at this point in his career, and maybe always. He was never really doing a ton with the ball, breaking a guy down off the dribble, whatever. Shake has a real level of like comfort and ease with the ball in his hands. You know, he can get pressured. They can speed him up sometimes, and Marcus Smart's a good defender, obviously. But I would be really, really surprised if he gets taken out of the rotation at any point.
Well, they have so few ball handlers, you know? You know, so yeah, I agree.
So, but I like the bet, and I like any friend bets based on Sixers bench player is something I support.
13, it's a lock. He's going over 13. He's not dropping like a full point per game for the rest of the year. And who knows, George Hill's barely going to play anyway. And then, wait, oh, non-basketball question. What is your go-to order at a classic ice cream truck? And is it weird for a grown man to go outside to patronize an ice cream truck if you have no children?
I'd say yes.
It's very weird. Do you have
I like an ice cream sandwich. I like what are they called? Like a firecracker, the red white, the red yellow, red blue and white.
Oh, like popsicle. The rocket pop. Like,
yeah, one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Chipwich feels very down the shore situation. Yeah,
Chipwich is great, but I'm very picky about which Chipwich I get. I don't like a crunchy chocolate chip cookie on the Chipwich. I like a soft one. If you're gonna tell me my go-to, it's going to be the ice cream bar with the like cookie crumbles all around it. Is that like a...
Yeah. Some of that stuff has nuts in it, so that's why I have my order ability is limited. Okay. Whenever I imagine... My dad eats an ice cream sandwich. The plain one with the chocolate chip cookie and the white frosting around the outside, the ice cream. He's 3 bites. When I imagine my dad, and I now haven't seen him in almost a year and a half, when I imagine my dad, it's my dad eating an ice cream sandwich in 3 bites and just finishing it and being done with it. That is the most crystallized image I have of my father.
Last one I will say is Choco Taco. Choco Taco is excellent. I can't eat any of them anymore because I'm vegan, but I miss those. And finally, I'll end on two notes about Nick Foles. We were asked in the mailbag a couple of pods ago, What was it? What Philadelphia athlete would we put on the Sixers? And we were talking about what kind of player Nick Foles was. I obviously said I thought he would be like Gordon Hayward because he is white. You said James Ennis, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that he predicted? Mm-hmm. This comes from Kevin from Philly, formerly from Oakland. I thought you'd be interested in my experience playing basketball against Nick Foles. The Eagles used to run a charity event where you could get someone to sponsor you to play against a team of players. For some reason, they actually played at my high school a few times, Muhlenberg High School in Reading, and someone sponsored me the last time they did it. It was Foles' first go-around with the Eagles. Of course, they didn't send the top guys to play a pickup basketball game against an out-of-shape former high school player, but we played against guys like Jason Avant, Brandon Boykin, Connor Barwin.
I remember that game. I remember reading about that game.
I remember a Boykin dunk, I think.
Yeah.
The Brandon Boykin, really nice guy, by the way. I used to do Alzheimer's charity stuff with him. Very nice guy. The few things that stuck out were Boykin's calf muscles. They were like softballs, and he could jump through the roof. No problem dunking at 5'5". I believe it was Avant that embarrassed me first by dogging me as I brought the ball up. He took it from me with ease before I even got to half court. I also attempted to foul Barwin, as I, not quite 6 feet, maybe 170 at the time, was inexplicably covering him in the post. I hung on his back as he dunked like I wasn't there, a true monster. The thing that stuck out to me about Foles was this. Every time we scored, he'd inbound the ball and throw a one-handed full-court pass to get it inbounds. All I remember thinking was, we get it, dude, you're a quarterback.
Yeah.
He must have done it 15 times. Other than that, I don't really remember how he played. He was definitely good. He was a D1 recruit for hoops. The game was fun. They were all cool, and we got destroyed. And then,
yeah, I mean, I imagine that's what James Ennis would be exactly like if he was playing in
Barry. Acting like showing off his quarterback arm.
Totally.
And then, hey guys, longtime listener from California and process guy since the beginning. Heard you guys mention Nick Foles playing basketball on the last podcast. Funnily, that's what he wrote. I'm from Orange County, California, and I used to play pickup with Foles a bunch of times, almost every weekend for the better part of a year or so. The best part is that he's not bad at all. The guy can really shoot, knows how to play, and hang with some legit guys. This was the time where he was shortly away from the NFL before he went to the Eagles. This was at a gym where a few retired NBA guys and NFL guys were also playing. Corey Maggette and Tony Gonzalez, to name a few. I just thought this would be funny to share with you. It was, well, look at the name,
yeah,
drop.
Of course he's good. He played. He was a good basketball player. No, I'm not saying James Ennis is a professional National Basketball Association player. He has started on many teams. He was an important player on the Sixers. saying Nick Foles would play like James Ennis is not an insult. People in the NBA are very good at basketball. Nick Foles not in the NBA, could not be in the NBA. And saying that he could be one is a compliment. Anybody.
Actually, one more, finally, from John. If you could trade Ben Simmons for any one player in the NBA, who would it be?
I don't know. Like a deal that would happen? Just anybody at all?
Just any anybody. Single person? Forget trade. Don't say trade. If you could take, you could have any player, but Ben Simmons has to come off the roster. Who is it?
Dame or Steph, maybe?
Yeah, Steph's a good one. I think it's, or is
or Harden?
It
Dame? Maybe Harden?
Yeah, well, that was the funny answer. Yeah. I didn't know how long it would take me to get to it. I think Dame, I would enjoy watching Dame more. I would love to cheer. I like Steph a lot, but I would love to cheer for Damian Lillard. Like, I would love for Damian Lillard to be on my favorite team.
Yeah.
That would be great. All right, what do we have? Who do we have on Friday? The Clippers?
We're in the stretch. This is the stretch. So, yeah, we got Clippers on Friday, and then I think the Warriors right after, and then the Suns, and then Bucks.
It's going to be tough. We're already off to a good start. Got two of them. Got the first two, right?
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you after the Clippers game Saturday morning. Are you done with TTP?
Yeah. You know, Lickface.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.